This week's mailbag comes to us from Kate. On May 23rd, my husband and I spoke to our real estate agent about possibly selling our home. We had no intention of an immediate start. Our agent told us the market was hot and now was a great time. 40 minutes later, our home was officially listed. 6 days later, it was posted on MLS with professional photos and a video tour. Just 6 days after that, we have a contract on our home. 12 days. I am just awestruck. I have never finished the 100 days prior to this. I have one-year-old twins and a four-year-old. I am the poster child for survival mode. But the main areas of our house have been slowly tackled over the last 4 years. Lisa's podcasts were my original nesting buddy. We cleaned out the hot mess room when the quarantine started. When I was on bed rest with my twins, I did the entire binder series. That household reference binder had everything my agent needed to get our home listed ASAP. All of her questions were answered. I just handed over the binder and focused on cleaning up our house. We sped through the 100 days. We cleaned all of the areas of the house, purged at least 16 garbage bags full of items and clothing. We actually cleaned and organized in the process. You know, it is all about making the move easier, and yes, our garage was full of baby gates and baby toys, and even a full-size play kitchen, but we weren't throwing random crap into every nook and cranny that we could find. I didn't realize what an impact everything was having. Every 100 days, I would tell myself, this time I'm going to make it through all 100 days. And then I would get really disappointed when I got derailed early on. I was not an organized child. I was not the tidy spouse. I have learned to organize. I have learned the joy of a completely empty counter. It really is a mindset shift and practice. I am honestly still in complete shock that my husband and I got our act together enough to pull this off during a quarantine with both of us working and keeping our kids entertained. But 4 years and 15 minutes a day, even if it was inconsistent, makes a huge impact over time. So stick with it. I promise you, this system works and it will change your life in amazing and unexpected ways.
Do you have an Organized 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organized365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. All right, this is my final in my three-part series of why living in this interim moment in the pandemic has been so hard. First time I was talking about, basically we feel like we're in a snow globe and we're not in control of anything and our life keeps getting shaken up. And last week I talked about how if you're a go with the flow person, you're standing in a puddle because your flow is gone. And thirdly, I want to talk about what is happening in our economy. And I'm not an economist, but I am a questioner and I love history and I think I have some insights into what is happening. So I want to share those with you, but also how we use our house is changing hugely. Let's talk about it and think about how we will be using our homes in the future. Years ago, and I don't remember where I read or where I heard this, but they said there's not a lot of information about the revolution from the agricultural age to the industrial age, and it was super hard to live through. And I've Googled, I've tried to find information. If you guys have books, feel free to let me know, and then I will read them, and then I will tell them for you if you don't want to read them. But what was it that was so hard when we went to the agricultural age to the industrial revolution? And living inside of an industrial world with schools and corporations and jobs and things like that, it's hard for me to even fathom like everybody working on farms or living in farms or what it would look like. And Greg and I watched a series on Masterpiece Theater here at the end of the summer that we really enjoyed called Poldark. And it is set in England or Ireland or Scotland or over there. And I think it's England though, because they end up in London. It's kind of similar to Downton Abbey, only Downton Abbey is, I think it's about the same time period, but it's from the perspective of the big house owners and what it was like to have one of these big houses as the economy was changing and they were having a hard time keeping their servant staff and all of that going and all of the things they were responsible for. Poldark is similar, only it's told from the position of the people who were working the land and the people who were working in the mines and in that smaller community. But it's the late 1700s, early 1800s. And I haven't really watched very many shows from that time period. And that would have been before the Industrial Revolution happened. So the Industrial Revolution is not happening during that show, but it gave me a better picture of what it would have looked like to live in an agricultural life. And it was interesting to me how hard it was sometimes for people to get food. Like, it's just hard to fathom as an American that it's difficult to get food when I could throw a stone and hit a grocery store from my house. You know, there are just so many grocery stores. This leads to a whole other conversation of how we can have food deserts in the United States, but we won't go there. Okay, so I love to listen to biographies about people, you know, about presidents, but also about our founding fathers and just other historical figures. I just love to listen to biographies. And I listened to a compilation biography. I will pull it up so I can tell you what it is this summer. I'm not all the way through it, but it is five different industrialists, and it's called Business Biographies and Memoirs, Titans of Industry by J.R. McGregor. In there, they talked about Andrew Carnegie, and I had never heard the biography of Andrew Carnegie, and it was interesting to me, in the very beginning of this book, they talk about his father and how his father was a hand weaver, so would get the yarn, and they would use hand looms, and they would basically make fabric. Now, we're watching the Poldark series, and these people are leaving their farms, and they're going into the little downtown, I guess, area, and they're buying fabric and they're having dresses made. So this is all resonating with me. And he says when he was like 5 or 6 years old, very young, all of a sudden, like in the snap of a finger, there started to be fabric available through mechanized looms. And literally overnight, there was zero demand for the hand looms anymore, because why would you make your own fabric if you could basically even buy it less already done? But Andrew Carnegie's father was so good at what he did, and his fabric was so good, that for like another 9 months, they still had people buying from him. But then eventually that business went away as well. And I thought, oh, I probably still would not have understood what that was like, having not lived through this pandemic now. But now I get it. Now I understand what is happening in the economy. I remember when we were on Clearwater Beach, as everything was starting to unfold, and we were celebrating our 25th wedding anniversary, not in Italy, and this was the trip that we'd scheduled because we couldn't go to Italy, and the next week Ohio was shut down. And so we're in the, as the pandemic is happening, every day Greg and I are walking on the beach and we're talking about what's going on, and I always like to figure out where business is going. And I remember saying to him before anything was shut down, you should invest in Zoom technologies. And he's like, what? You know, blah, 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 blah. 2 weeks later, he said, what is that Zoom thing you were talking about? Because it is through the roof. And not only that, there are two Zoom stocks and people didn't know which was which. So they both were up. And I was like, oh, well, I use Zoom all the time. You know, I'm an online entrepreneur. All these online things that some of you just found recently, I've known about for a long time. Now, Greg does not have Instagram, Facebook, no social media whatsoever. He's had the same job for 30 years. When he came to work from home, this was the best. I go over to his computer, and in eighth grade, we started using computers, and we had an Apple IIe, and on the Apple IIe, it was a green cursor, and then you would command, you know, RT for write 90, and the little turtle would turn 90, and then you do forward 100, and then the little turtle would go forward on your screen. Do you guys remember this when you did basic computers? If you're younger than me, sorry. And it would be this green text, or like if you've seen, oh, what's the old 80s movies where they have the coding and you see this text? That is what my husband's computer screen looks like. I'm like, what is this? Are you using like a 1970s program? Why doesn't your computer look like a computer? And he goes, well, I don't use WYSIWYG. I'm like, what is a WYSIWYG? I now know, because we have a custom coded site. So when you go to a website and it looks like pictures, like there's coding behind that that makes it look like pictures. Well, I kind of knew that part. I didn't realize you could turn it off. you can turn it off. And when you turn it off, then you don't have to use your mouse and you could do like all these commands on the keyboard. I was like, this is like going back in time. I cannot believe that you don't have WYSIWYG on your computer. And it's a black screen and it's got all these colors like green and yellow and blue. Some of you are spitting your coffee out. You are laughing so hard. And others of you are like, what do you mean you can have it not look like a picture? Anyway, I digress. So Greg is only 5 years older than me in age, but my parents had me very young. They were 22 and 23 when I was born. And Greg's parents were a little bit older, but his stepdad was significantly older than his mom, I think 12 years. So he was raised by a stepdad that was like 15 years, like in his 40s, when he was in 50s, 60s, like older, a lot older. And he, from a different generation. So my parents are the oldest baby boomers and his mom is one of the youngest silent generation, but his stepdad was almost the greatest generation. So very different mindset of how we were raised. And Greg has taken on these characteristics of an old man, like, we don't need technology. Why do we have this? I don't understand why we have technology. And here I am running an internet business. He's like, I don't know what you do. I don't understand why people opt into emails and why you have to always be on that Instagram thing. Like, I just don't understand it. Going into the pandemic, okay? As we go into the pandemic, we all had different thoughts about technology, social media, working from home, artificial intelligence, all of these things. And it is like we were living in the agricultural revolution and all of a sudden you could buy fabric without making it by yourself. And this change from the industrial age to the information age, which I think we've already made maybe, and now we're making another one, whatever. We're definitely in the middle of a transition. I remember a year ago, you know, I love the book Generations by Neil Strauss and William Howe. And they talk about in there how everything is cyclical. Like, you know, financial markets go up and then they don't go down. And everything, including stuff. The height of materialism was the 80s. The height of minimalism was 2020. And I just kept thinking to myself, yeah, but what would make people want to keep stuff again? Like, I can never see a time when people wouldn't want to be minimalist. They wouldn't want to have only the few and the best of what's left. And when the pandemic hit, I went, oh, I get it. I get it. We're back to the Great Depression. How many of you know people who've lived through the Great Depression? Do they throw anything away? No. Do they reuse the tinfoil? Yes. Are we going to become them? Probably. Because now we have all lived through a time where we couldn't get toilet paper. Toilet paper. Like, who would have ever thought you'd run out of that? And there were other things along the way that you could not get. And we're so used to being able to get what we want when we want it. Now we are all collectively not going to declutter as much for good reason, right? Also, we've never in our entire lives had everybody come home for months on end, even people who didn't live here anymore. And do you know what we needed more of? Everything. Everything that we had decluttered. And we had gotten to this minimalistic living, which is great when you're going out to eat and you're going here and you're traveling and you're digital nomading in your business and like you're just living with what you need because you can always go and get it, except now we can't always go and get it. And when we go to get it, not necessarily there. It's not good or bad. It just is. And the more we don't assign any blame or emotions to what we're going through, the easier it will be for us to deal with it. So if you in this time of the pandemic wish you would have kept XYZ, but you decluttered it last summer because you were going through the 100-day program and now you wish you would have kept it, don't do that. You didn't know. No, nobody knew. Nobody knew that we were going to need these things. You did the best with what you knew at the time. And now that we've gone through this experience, don't say, well, I'm not going to get rid of anything because I never know if I'm going to need it. Come on. If you didn't need it in the last 6 months, you're probably not going to need it. I'm just saying. We've been through the pandemic now. So if you're not using it now and you don't anticipate it, you're going to use it in the next year, then lovingly bless and release it to somebody who actually needs it and maybe can't find it at the store. And instead of just donating to Goodwill like I've done, be more purposeful with your donations. Are you getting rid of a bunch of kids' clothes? You're not having more kids? These are all smaller age kids. Who do you know that has kids smaller than you? Because there are going to be clothing shortages. I'm just here to tell you, there are going to be more and more shortages of more and more things because retail, a lot of retail is going bankrupt. If you thought a lot of these stores were not already basically bankrupt anyway, I don't know what to tell you. They were. They were all already going bankrupt. It's just pushing, it's condensing that timeline. A lot of things that were going to happen in the next decade are all going to happen in the next 2 years. And what we've seen in the last 6 months is just the beginning of what's going to come in the next 18 months because business moves very, very slowly. You are able to get your kids, get your stuff, and get home within a day. Businesses take a long time to charge off bad debt, figure out where their shipments are, reduce inventory in stores, consolidate store. It takes a long time. We're going to be seeing the ripple effects of this pandemic over the next couple of years. And slowly over time, you will start to see how much damage really was. And a lot of people are saying, when it's high tide, everyone looks great. And when it's low tide and the tide goes out, you see who's been swimming naked. And that's pretty much what we're seeing in almost every single industry. We're seeing who was swimming naked. And it's not the industry's fault. Very few companies have a couple months of cash on hand to weather a bad season, and no one has enough cash on hand except like five different businesses to weather a year of that. Like, it's just not how you run a business. You don't run a business and keep all your money so that you can run a business at a loss for a year with no people coming in. Like, that just doesn't happen. So it's not business owners' fault. It's not industry's fault. Things that were already going to happen in the economy, the timeline just got condensed. Businesses that didn't have cash on hand, their business is going to go out of business. It's just what it is. This is a revolution of business. And the pandemic was the stock market crash or the Twin Towers going down. It's just the spark that started all of this that is going forward. So what do we do with that information? There are a couple of things I want to ask you about and have you think about. How we used our home, for 99% of us, in the last 6 months is not a way we ever imagined we were going to use our home. Many of us did not imagine we would be schooling from home. Many of us did not imagine we would be working from home. Even if we thought maybe we would be working from home, we did not think our spouse would be working from home with us. We did not think that our college-age children were going to come home and do college from home. We did not think that our young adult children were going to come back home in the way that they came back home. We did not think that we were not going to be able to have our grandchildren over for a long period of time when we created these little spaces for them. We did not think we had to have this amount of high-speed internet in our house. We did not know we needed, like, just think about all of the things. Didn't realize we'd be cooking 3 meals a day, 7 days a week again from home. By the way, you could still have gotten carry out. Guess how I know? But we didn't realize that. We didn't realize we were going to run out of Lysol wipes. Sorry, that's probably still triggering for some of you. Toilet paper, all of these things. Like, we just did not realize that our houses needed to be kind of like bomb shelters. Like, we just did not realize that we needed to be so self-sufficient and non-interdependent, is what I would say. We're used to being communal, and all of a sudden we are not communal. So as we live in this interim normal, before we get to whatever is coming, what did you like about this? What didn't you like about this? What do you want to change? How much of a buffer do you want to have? So for me, from a productivity aspect, I go to Costco 4 times a year. I've told you this before. And I buy all of our paper plates and I buy all of our toilet paper and our paper towels and everything in a huge, ridiculous priced Costco run. And then I don't have to worry about it for 3 months. Luckily for me, I did this before we went to Florida. So when there was a toilet paper shortage, I already had all my toilet paper because that's how I buy it. Now I can't restock because that's not how we buy it anymore, but what are the things now that are your never outs? Are you still going to live just minimalistically week to week, month to month? Or do you feel more comfortable planning for the quarter or going through planning day in the 100 days and saying, okay, for the next 4 months, what foods am I going to need? What clothing are we going to need? What electronics are we going to need? Like, and doing that every 120 days and replenishing every 120 days. The first time you do this, it's very expensive and it takes a long time because you go to multiple different stores and place different Amazon orders and things like that. But after you do it once, then you can continue to save your money during that 120 days. And when you do it the next time, you have the money saved to do it. So it can cost a couple $1,000s to do it, but you would have normally spent that week after week after week. And now you're not going out in public. And for me, it was a productivity thing. Now it's a health thing. This is a great time before we get into the winter to think, okay, if we were to shut down again, which I don't think we will, but there may be times when there are outbreaks and you don't feel comfortable going in stores or going where you were, how much of everything do you want to keep in your house now? How much can you afford to keep in your house, and where will it go? Where is your stockpile going to go? How much do you have, and how much do you want to save? And talk to your spouse about that. The next one is, have you made changes to how your home functions? And I talked about that this summer. And you're probably going to need to look at your house every 120 days. We haven't been through a full year of the pandemic. And I don't mean that from a illness standpoint. I mean it from a your house functioning standpoint. In the United States, we went into the pandemic in late spring or early spring, I guess. And pretty quickly into that quarantine, we were able to go outside for sure in the South, but then more up in the North. And now we've lived through it in the summer. And in the summer, it was like, ah, bummer, we can't go on a vacation. Ah, bummer, our pool is closed, so we'll come up with other things to do. We haven't lived through a fall and winter of this yet. And I don't mean from a sickness standpoint. I mean from a house standpoint. We're going into fall and winter, October through February, which you have not experienced yet in this stay-at-home order, where these same people either still are or are going to come back to live with you again. How is your house going to function in October, November, December, January, February, March? What things do you want to have on hand that were not a big deal in the summer but will be a big deal in the winter? And start to think through those things. You're going to say, what would I think about? Things that come to mind for me are snow clothes. Those are going to sell out super fast. Even if you or your kids or your friends don't play out in the snow, you might this year. That's all I'm saying. You might want to go for walks, and you might want snow pants this year when you didn't before. And they're just, I don't think, will be the same quantity there normally are. Secondly is cooking. I still haven't really been cooking very much, but I am considering, and I have actually started doing more cooking at home. Like, I cooked twice last week, and I made my family basically give me a rounding standing ovation because I made spaghetti and meatballs. But hey, I don't know what to tell you. We probably are going to start cooking from home, even though we have been getting takeout. So what are those foods? If there's specific brands of anything that you like I like a certain kind of gum. You do not even want to know how much gum I have already purchased. It's the most ridiculous thing to stockpile, but people, you know, I'm weird. You've got something like that too. You make a certain kind of Christmas cookie. Like, my grandmother made cherry chip cookies, and she had to go to Amish country to get the cherry chips. Do you have a recipe like that your family is expecting at Thanksgiving or New Year's or something like that, and it has a special ingredient that is not easy to find normally? It's going to be really hard to find this year. Or just in general, people I know who actually cook, they will say there are certain ingredients that still today are hard to find. So look at your fall and winter recipes, because we haven't been cooking fall and winter recipes. What do you need for those fall and winter recipes? And consider, everyone up until the pandemic, everyone had been living a more minimalistic life. They'd been thinking more about less is more, keeping only what you love, having only what you need on hand. Now, for some of us, that looked like, you know, tiny house living. For others of us, it looked like a big old family farmhouse that just had a few less decorations. I mean, your idea of what is enough is very individualized. And your idea of what is enough may have changed in the last 6 months. And I do not want you to beat yourself up over that. I want you to just accept it. You're right. I don't want to get rid of this because We're going to do hand-me-downs now, and we didn't do hand-me-downs with the kids before. You're right. I don't want to get rid of something in my kitchen that I would have normally gotten rid of in my kitchen, but if I'm going to be stuck at home all winter, then guess what? I make Christmas cookies now, and I didn't used to. Like, I haven't made them for the last 10 years, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to be making Christmas cookies this year because it'll be something to do, and my family will like it, and it'll be a fun tradition. And let me just tell you, I'm already thinking about how are we going to fill that holiday time where people are not working with things that are fun but are not crowd-inducing. Cooking at home is one of those things that you can do. Again, I've already said it, but I will reiterate it. What brands and quantity of things are important to you? Now is a great time to start working on that as much as you are financially able. And specifically, though, where are you going to store it? I don't want you to be walking into a wall of toilet paper in your living room. I don't think toilet paper is going to be an issue again. Like, anything that's run out probably isn't going to run out again. It'll be something new. It's kind of like the shell game. It's going to be something new under the shell that you can't find. And again, I'm going to reiterate what I had said last time, is look at your cash flow. Because your cash flow probably has changed since the start of the pandemic, but maybe not in the ways that you thought. So you may have less cash coming into your family than you used to, but you also may have less going out. And when you look at the fall and you look at the winter, think about how in 2019 you spent money in October, November, December, January, and February. Where your dollars went, what memories are important to your family, what family traditions are important, what ones you could change, and how you can reallocate that future money that you used to spend in different ways so that your home can feel like a home for all of the people that are living there with you. I know that these three podcasts have been a little bit different. It has taken me a long, long, long time to think through how to figure out what was going on and then put it in a way that was applicable to you and your home, just to give us words for what we're feeling. And I think that once you identify something, you're able to solve it. So I think I already mentioned this to you in a previous episode, but in our company, we use the Traction system of EOS, which is the Entrepreneurial Operating System by Gino Wickman. And one of the things that we do is we do IDS. IDS is to identify, discuss, and solve. So whenever there's an issue inside of Organize 365, which there always are, like, how are we going to do international shipping? Like, how are we rolling out the app? What if we, whatever questions are coming into customer service or within our team, those are issues. And we identify the issue. Then when we pick an issue, we discuss it. So like, let's just do international shipping, because that's something we did recently. We used to have international shipping, and then we didn't, and then we shipped to Canada, and then now we have international shipping. And the issue was, international shipping is astronomically expensive. It's like sending a package to the moon, basically. It's ridiculous. It's like $100 to send a planner. I know it sounds like I'm lying, but all of the international people are going, yep, nope, she's right. It's $100 to get a planner. Like, it's insane. The shipping is insane. And so we want to offer our product internationally. You internationally want to buy our product, but I cannot figure out or get my system to accurately charge, nor can I fathom asking $100 for shipping. So what we decided to do, that was the issue. We want to provide international shipping. Everyone wants international shipping. What can we do? So then we in Organize 365 have a discussion. All of the different options. And one of the options that came up was there was someone international who made a purchase and had us ship it to an American address. And it was a forwarding company that would then forward it on to her country. And we're like, wait, what? And so we did some more research and we were like, there are a lot of these companies where we can literally ship a package from our warehouse to somewhere in the United States. And then when it gets to this forwarding company, they contract with you internationally to tell you how much it's going to cost to get to you and the duties and the VAT tax and the, I don't know, extra fees for everything in the world. And then you pay that company and then they ship it to your country and they do the customs and all these other things. And I said, well, that's easy. Like, we can ship anywhere in the United States. If there are places we can ship in the United States, and then the international customer will work with that broker to get it to their country, like, game, you can buy anything you want. You can buy, now you can buy the binders. You can literally buy anything you want. It's going to cost you $100 to have it shipped to you. It's free inside of the United States. Like, we'll freely ship it to the person who's going to ship it to you. But it's going to cost like $100 to get. It's insane. It's insane. And because it's insane shipping, I want to say we're not going to do it because I can't imagine paying that much shipping. And my team is like, yeah, but they know they buy from the United States other things. Like, they know that the shipping has gotten ridiculous. So let's let them do it. So that was the discussion. So the solution was we ship to a broker that then will ship to you if you're doing international. So we identify what the problem is. We discuss all of the possible solutions. And sometimes the solution is we don't do whatever it is. So another example, the book tour. Okay, just had PTSD, sorry. Okay, so the book tour, I had figured out that maybe I could do a drive-through book tour where, like, you drive through and I'll be on the outside and I'll sign your book and we can get a picture. And we had a whole meeting about this. We discussed all the details. We talked about buying the windsock that would be floating, you know, and guiding you in as you came to wherever I was for the drive-through book tour. We're going to do Eventbrite tickets. We already ordered all the book signing book plates and who was going to volunteer and t-shirts were going to be involved. Like, I was 8 miles down the rabbit trail on this one. We get to the very end and I say to Mary, Mary, scale of 1 to 10. Drive through book tour. She goes, oh, marketing? It's a 10. I was like, yes. Love it, Mary. Great. Safety? She goes, it's a 3. I was like, no, Mary. No, it's got to be higher than a 3. She goes, no, no, no. You just said you're not wearing a mask. They're wearing a mask, but you're not wearing a mask. She said, I love that you're going to do the Eventbrite thing because we're going to have to contact every single person over the last 19 days. And if even one person gets COVID, I was like, oh my gosh. She goes, and you said face shield. That's not the same thing. We don't even know how this is translated. And on and on and on she went. I said, okay, great. Solution is we're not doing it. Like, we're not doing it. Like, I can't have the responsibility and be contacting everyone that I met in the last 14. Like, it's not possible. So we identified it. We discussed it. And that was the solution. That's what I have been trying to do in these three podcasts with you. Identifying what is the problem. Like, the problem is not the pandemic. Unless you have COVID, which is not very many of us, the problem is not the pandemic. The problem is our economy is changing. Our society is changing. There is no more flow. Somebody keeps shaking up my house like it's a snow globe. Those are the actual problems. And in these three podcasts, we discussed, why is it a problem? Where did it come from? Is it really a problem for you? What are some possibilities? And now you will go and you will solve. You will solve for how often is your house or your life feel like it's gotten shaken like a snow globe. And you will figure out of those 7 things, how many of those affect you. And then you will go through and you'll be like, am I flow maker? Have I lost my flow maker? Am I standing in a puddle? How do I get the hustle and bustle of my routine back? How do I get my morning, afternoon, and evening routines? How do I get through the day easier, happier, better for everyone in my family and in my household? And then today, we touched on the economy, which fascinates me. Just in general, it fascinates me. But the fact that we are living through a really hard transition that just seems to be accelerated in so many areas, like I could just list so many areas. Is it impacting how you work? In my case, I'm an internet business. Like, I'm an internet business and a product business. I actually am in the right place in the right time for this new economy that's coming. I will say for quite a few years, I kept having to explain why I'm on the internet and why I would do it and why I'm growing my audience this way. And then all of a sudden in March of 2020, everybody's like, Lisa, how did you do what you're doing? Because that's exactly what we need to do with our business. I was just ahead of the wave. And now the wave is where I am. The industry that you're in may be one that is not going to make it through the next 10 years. Or you may be on one that is going to be huge 10 years from now. And that doesn't mean you have to change what you're doing at the company that you're aligned with today, unless you're the business owner, but just recognize it. Like, don't just hope that your employer or your business has a plan. Find out if they have a plan. Look at the rest of the industry. Are you matching the other people in your industry? Is it going up? Is it going down? Is this a time for you to make a pivot? All right. Well, we're all in this together, is all I have to say. I would love your feedback about these three podcast episodes. If these helped you, specifically thinking about why, yeah, you're right. I don't want to declutter as much as I used to, and I was wondering why I'm feeling that way. I think it's because we're moving away from minimalism now. I think we'll be moving away from minimalism now. I don't think we're just going to buy for the sake of buying, but I also don't think we're just going to declutter down to the bare necessities anymore, because there is comfort and there is need to have a little bit more in our houses right now. Have a great week.